Okay. What I wanted to speak about today is to start with a question which is somewhat relevant to today, literally, a day on which we change the clock and go on daylight savings time. The question which plagues many of us around Pesach time is, why do we have to start the Seder so late? You know, well, why is it that we're waiting till, 8:30, 8:45, whatever it happens to be, to start the Seder? You know, to put it differently, why is it so imperative that the Seder be celebrated after it gets dark? Everyone here can probably remember, not so many years ago, that the Sarim not infrequently came out during standard time. So instead of starting at 8:30 or so, the Sarim could actually start as early as 7:30. If you think back a little bit, I just saw an article recently, I think it was 1986, when they started daylight savings time at the beginning of April as opposed to the end of April. If you recall, before 1986, what's that? Yeah, that's how long ago. Yeah, right. The end of April used to be the beginning of daylight savings time. So when that was the case, not infrequently, the Sarim were observed during standard time. So again, they started 7:30 or thereabouts. Now, of course, with daylight savings time beginning the second week in March, Seder is always, during daylight savings time, and we wonder, especially as we're perhaps falling asleep, in the wee hours of the morning, why is it that it's so important that the Seder be started at night? So there's a technical answer to this question, and there's a hashkafic answer to this question. I want to first just start with a technical answer, and then we'll talk a little bit about the hashkafa behind the idea of the Seder starting at night, and we'll tie it in to one of the poems, which is recited at the very, very end of the Seder. And for those shuls that say Payet, that say Yotzus on Shabbat HaGadol, this is also part of the Yotzus, which is recited on Shabbat HaGadol as well. On a technical level, the Pasuk says in Perek Yudeis and Sefer Shmos, the Achulas HaBasar Balayla Hazeh, that the flesh of the Karban Pesach is supposed to be consumed, the Balayla Hazeh, on this night, right? And the understanding is that the flesh of the Korban Pesach has to be consumed at night, and night is defined not simply by when the sun goes down, but when three stars come out, and is considered to be night, not twilight, not sort of night, but night beyond any shadow of a doubt. We understand as well that the other mitzvot of the night, even though we don't have a Korban Pesach anymore, but the other mitzvot of the night, be they the mitzvah d'oraisa of eating matza, or the mitzvah d'oraisa of Sifo Yetzias Mitzrayim, telling over the story, or even the dinim d'rabbanan of eating maror, or even the dalet kosos, the four cups of wine, those two, the Gemara and the Poskim explain, are also tied to the Korban Pesach. And all of those mitzvot have to be observed once it, only after it becomes certainly night, only after the three stars have emerged. Again, approximately the time that Shabbos would be over. And that, that means that during daylight savings time in New York, it's sometime in the eighth, before we're able to sit down and begin the Seder properly. This is always an issue that comes up with, let's say, old age homes, things of that nature. In other words, when you have a group of people who go to sleep a lot earlier and you want to try to put together a community Seder for them, so how does that work exactly? They'd be very happy to sit down at 6 o'clock, you tell them we can't really start till 8:30, so how is that supposed to work? So the truth is it's complicated because, really even Kiddush, the kickoff act of the Seder is not allowed to be recited until it gets dark. So in a situation like that, what people typically do is they're trying to, accommodate the people who have a different sleeping schedule, but at the same time accommodate the halacha, is they end up creating a Seder which is kind of backwards. Some of the songs you can certainly do before it gets dark. So they end up creating a Seder that starts with Haggadah, and Echad Miyodeya, and, you know, let's talk about the evening a little bit, and you dray around, you know, doing, right, you know, you dray around, you do everything, you know, everything that's not essential, that's not a fundamental part of the Seder, you do all of that first, you kind of get it out of the way, and then by the time you've done all of that, you're hoping that it's at least some definition of nice, that you can begin the first of the four cups. But yeah, it poses a lot of difficulties and involves a lot of juggling in order to be able to do that in a way which is halakhically acceptable. But again, that's on a technical level that, you know, we understand from the pasuk, from the Gemara, the Poskim, that, you know, that all of the mitzvot are supposed to be performed at night. The question that I want to pose now and try to get into during this year is more of a hashkafic one, a philosophical one. Why is it that the Torah and the Poskim are so insistent that all of these mitzvot be performed at night? The truth is, following up on the famous question of Manishtana, you know, why is this night different from all other nights, it's unusual in general to have mitzvot that are associated with the night time. If you think about most of the mitzvot, particularly those that are associated with holidays, they tend to be mitzvot which can only be performed during the course of the day. Right? Take Kiyas Shofar on Rosh Hashanah. You're not allowed to blow shofar at night. Right? Lulav on Sukkot. It has to be performed during the daytime hours. Cheesecake on Shavuos. Okay, you can have whatever. But, you know, the mitzvot, you know, typically speaking, are associated with the daytime hours. It's somewhat unusual that the mitzvot of Pesach are specifically supposed to be carried out at night. So, to try to understand that, and to try to understand this insistence on it being night, I want to turn our attention to, again, as I mentioned, a piyuk, a poem, which is recited at the very, very end of the Seder. Not literally the very end of the Seder, but the last, you know, last 5-10 minutes of the Seder. Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit. And specifically, and it's as well, it's a piyut which is recited by those shuls that say Yotzus on Shabbos HaGadol, as part of the Yotzus of Shabbos HaGadol as well. The piyut begins with the words, Oz rov nisim hifleisa balayla. Indeed, the majority of miracles you Hashem caused to happen at night time. Most of the miracles in history took place at night, and the piyut goes on to recount many of those miracles, and each of the stanzas of the piyut ends off with the phrase, Vayehi v'chatzi halayla. It came to pass in the middle of the night. Now, of course, that phrase, Vayehi v'chatzi halayla, in its origins, goes back to Sefer Shmos when it's describing the Makas B'choros, right, the plague of the firstborn. The pasuk in its entirety says, Vayehi v'chatzi halayla. It came to pass in the middle of the night, Hashem, he called b'chor be'eretz Mitzrayim. God struck down all of the firstborn in Egypt. And the author of the piyut, we'll talk about in just a moment, takes that phrase, Vayehi v'chatzi halayla, it came to pass in the middle of the night, and he applies it to so many of the miracles which are associated with nighttime. Who is the author of this particular piyut? So, like many of the piyut and many of the poems which we recite on Shabbos HaGadol, the author of the piyut was a Gadol B'Yisrael by the name of Rav Yosef Tuv Elam. A very interesting name. Not Yosef. Yosef is a pretty standard name. But Tuv Elam actually means good boy. Right? Yosef Tuv Elam was French. He was one of the Balei HaTosfos. He's actually quoted in Tosfos and Shas. And apparently in French, his last name was Bon Fils, which means good boy, right? So they translated it into Hebrew of Yosef Tuv Elam. I guess he was a good boy. I mean, you know, that's so he was one of the Balei HaTosfos. In other words, he was from that same group with Rabbeinu Tam, you know, the Ri, you know, all of the great Balei HaTosfos who were descended from Rashi, Talmidim of Rashi. So he, in addition to being one of the Balei HaTosfos, wrote poetry. But again, we have to understand, when we're dealing with poetry that comes from one of the Balei HaTosfos, you know, we're dealing with someone who wasn't just trying to pick a nice rhyme, you know, to make it work well, but, you know, someone who was really trying to convey ideas, you know, and insights into Hashkafas HaTorah through this poetry. So, what is this poem about? Let me just read a couple of stanzas, and we'll translate, and then we'll try to get into the poem a little bit. Azrov Nisim Hitleisho Balayla. Most miracles, you Hashem, caused to take place at night. Birosh HaShmuros Zeh HaLayla. This night, the miracles took place at the beginning of the watches of the night. So here's some examples of some miracles that happened at night. Ger Tzedek Nitzachto Kinechlach LoLayla. You caused Avram Avinu to be victorious in his battle against the four kings when the night split into two for him. That's a reference to the Pasuk in Bereishis that Avram Avinu, when he went to war against the four kings, pursued them into the depths of night. When Avimelech, the king of the Plishtim, took Sarah into his harem, so you, Hashem, judged him in the middle of the night. You caused Lavan the Aramean to be frightened in the middle of the night. Again, in both cases, God revealed himself to Avimelech in a dream. God revealed himself to Lavan in a dream. In both cases, he told them, you know, leave my people alone. Don't start up with Avram. Don't start up with Yaakov. The Yisrael Yosai Lo'el Vayuchol Olayla. Yisrael Yaakov Avinu struggled with a malach and overcame him in the middle of the night. And indeed, all of these things took place in the middle of the night. And we go on to read various descriptions of miracles that took place throughout Jewish history in the middle of the night. What is the point that Rabbi Yosef Tzuvelim is looking to bring out over here? So there's an interesting comment from the Maisa Nissim. The Maisa Nissim is a commentary on the Haggadah that was authored by one of the great Achronim of the 1700s, the author of the Nesivos HaMishpat, who wrote many, many sfarim on Chumash, on Tanakh, most well known for his sfarim on Shas and various parts of Shulchan Aruch. And Nesivos HaMishpat is a classic commentary on Shulchan Aruch. So in the Maisa Nissim, he writes that the point of this poem is to show all of the miracles that God performed historically at Pesach time. And the author, the Maisa Nissim says, when the poem says, Haz Rov Nissim Hitleisho Ba'alayla, you know, you Hashem caused the majority of miracles to take place Ba'alayla. Ba'alayla should not be translated at night, but Ba'alayla should be translated on that night. Right, in other words, with the direct article, the Hey Hayidia, right? Not Vilayla, but Balayla, on that night. And says the author of the Maisa Nissim, all of the miracles which are described in this poem took place on the night of Pesach in some way or another. So that sounds good. The issue is, when you actually start going through the various miracles that are being described over here, it's not obvious that they took place on the night of Pesach. So let's just take an example. Right? You, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, enabled Avram Avinu to fight and be victorious against the four kings at night. Did that take place on Pesach? Not clear from the Pesukim. So the commentary's quote is that the Medrash Perkei de Rabbi Elazar says that, you know, the victory of Avraham Avinu against the four kings indeed took place on Pesach. Okay, so the Medrash will accept. Fine. Zanto Melech Girar Bachalom HaLayla. Right, you Hashem appeared to Avimelech in a dream on Pesach. On Pesach? So we know that that took place on Pesach. So here, we don't have any midrashim that indicate, that's my knowledge anyway, we don't have any midrashim that indicate that Avimelech, the king of the Plishtim, took Sarah into his harem on Pesach, and that dream where HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Avimelech and said, you know, don't touch her, that took place on Pesach. The commentary is right that, you know, the author of the theater, Yosef Suvelin, must have had some kind of tradition that that indeed took place on Pesach. Okay. Hivchadata Arami the Emesh Laila. You, Hashem, caused Lavan to be frightened when you appeared to him in the middle of the night. Again, according to the Maisa Nisim, we would have to say that Lavan pursued Yaakov Avinu and was told by God in a dream, don't run after him. But that happened on Pesach as well. Again, it's not in the Pesukim. I don't think it's in the Midrashim. So it becomes a little bit odd that, you know, all of a sudden the pious one of Yosef Suvelin seems to have had a tradition that everything that ever happened in Jewish history seems to have happened on Pesach. Okay, but again, if you tell me that there's a tradition that everything happened on Pesach, okay, so we had a tradition, you know, I mean, we can't argue on that. But then there's a line which becomes extremely difficult to fit into this rubric that what's being described over here are all of the events that took place on Pesach. We're told, Sina Notar Agogi, the descendant of Agag, who was Haman, right, had hatred in his heart, the Chosav Sparim Balaira, and he wrote the edicts at night, those edicts which would spell out the extermination of the Jewish people. So when did that take place? When did Haman write the edicts that would, you know, call for the extermination of the Jewish people? It's clear that that did not happen on Pesach. How is it clear that it didn't happen on Pesach? Because if you read the Megillah says that Haman cast the lot in which he decided that the Jews would be destroyed in Adar. That lot took place on the 13th of Nisan, and it was on the 13th of Nisan that the edicts were composed and sent out to all of the people in the provinces. It says it took place on the 13th of Nisan. Now, the 13th of Nisan is close to Pesach, right? I mean, you know, everybody's kids are off from yeshiva already by the 13th of Nisan. You know, it's close, but no cigar. It's not actually, it's not the day of Pesach itself, it's not the night of Pesach. In fact, Chazal is very explicit that it was, you know, within the next couple of days on Pesach that the Jews fasted, and at the end of that time, Esther went before Ahasuerus to beg that the decree, ultimately to beg that the decree would be rescinded, but the night on which the edicts were actually composed and sent out by Haman was not Pesach, it was the 13th of Nisan. So if we're going to take the interpretation that what's being described over here in the poem are all of these things that are associated with Pesach, we're going to have a problem with this line over here. This line is clearly describing something which is close to Pesach, but did not actually take place on Pesach itself. I think a different way of reading the poem is as follows. Not everything being described in the poem is necessarily an event that took place on Pesach, but the common denominator of all of them is that they took place at night, which is really the Pashat of Shat, I think, the simple reading of the poem. Oz Rov Nisim Hitleisa Balaila. Most of the miracles the Shua HaKadosh Baruch Hu have caused to happen throughout history, those miracles tend to be in the nighttime. So what's the significance of that? We know that day and night, besides just being physical properties, you know, physical phenomena, are also representative of the degree to which we feel directly the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? When we feel God's hand in our lives, that's considered to be yom, that's daytime, it's daylight. When we do not directly feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in our lives, when we feel distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we look out and we say, we can't perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, in a metaphoric sense, that's described as being Laila. That's described as being night. Alright? That's why when we say the bracha following Kriya Shema at night, we speak about emes ve'emuna kol zos. Right? When we say the bracha following Kriya Shema in the morning, we say emes ve'yatziv. Everything that has been said is true and it's yatziv. It's something which is firmly established. At night, we say it's emes, it's true, but it's ve'emuna. It's something that we say based on faith. Right? The pasuk says, you know, that lahagid ba'boker chazdecha, in the morning times when everything seems to be good and wonderful and bright outside, we speak of Hashem's chesed, of His loving kindness. But at night, when things seem to be dark and difficult and we're having a hard time, then we speak about emuna. We speak about, we don't see the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. We have a sense of trust and faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He's going to help us out. But right now we see Laila. Says the Piyutim of Yosef Tuv Elam, the greatest miracles in Jewish history happen when on the surface it seems to be night. When on the surface everything seems to be dark and there seems to be no hope and everything looks like it's just going to end in despair. Those are davka the times when HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals Himself to us and lights up the middle of the night and performs a miracle. That's the message that I think that Rav Yosef Tuv Elam means to impart in this piyur. Oz rov nisim hisleisa balayla. Most of the great miracles that happened in history took place balayla, at a time when we thought Hashem was distant, when we thought that we couldn't connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we thought that everything was dark and depressing and dismal, and that, you know, there was no hope for anything. It's davka then that the greatest miracles took place. And then if you go through the various events which are described in the Tiyud, what characterizes all of them is not necessarily that they happened on Pesach, but they all happened at a time of night, either literally or figuratively. They happened at a time where it looked like things were going to go in a terrible direction. Avram Avinu sets out to fight against four of the greatest kings who ruled at that particular time. Right? Again, if a person was looking at it from the perspective of Teva, of what was likely to happen from a natural perspective, who would you bet on? You wouldn't bet on Avraham Avinu, right, offhand, right? We always bet on Avraham Avinu because we know that he has Hashem on his side. But looking at it from the point of view of Teva, of, you know, the natural order of things, Avraham Avinu was in the middle of the night when he fought against those kings, right? Sarah is taken into the harem of Avimelech. What do we think is going to happen? Lavan is pursuing after Yaakov. A Malach comes and is fighting with Yaakov Avinu. All of these things are night. In most cases, they're literally taking place at night, but they're also metaphorically taking place at night. They're taking place at a time where things look hopeless. And suddenly, out of the middle of the hopelessness, appears this light and this miracle where HaKadosh Baruch Hu somehow, you know, turns things around 100%. I think that's how we understand the line about Haman and the edicts. Sina natar agogi. Haman had so much hatred in his heart. The kasav svarim balayla. And in the middle of the night, he wrote these edicts which would destroy the Jewish people. How do we know that he wrote the edicts at night? Right? I don't think it even matters whether he wrote them at night or during the day, or, you know, how many minutes after Shkia did he keep Rabbeinu Tam, you know, when he wrote that. I don't think that's really the discussion. The point is that, by definition, if Haman is writing edicts to destroy the Jewish people, it could be broad daylight outside, but it's Laila, but it's the middle of the night as far as we're concerned. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the midst of this night, in the midst of this darkness and depression, comes along and makes an incredible miracle to not only save the Jewish people, but to give us dominion and power over those who would seek to destroy us, you know, going forward. So that's the theme of this entire miracle, of this entire period. You know, the miracles happen davka when you least expect them. I think that comes out as well in the last line of the poem, which is perhaps even more familiar to us because it's the lyrics to several songs, right? A number of Nigunim have been composed, you know, around these words. Karev Yom, Asher hu lo yom v'lo laila, bring speedily that day, which is neither day nor night. What does that mean? Bring the day which is neither day nor night. What does that mean? So that's actually a reference to a pasuk in Zechariah, which we can read the pasuk, but then we probably still won't understand what the pasuk is talking about. The pasuk says that in Perek Yudal, the pasuk Zion, V'haya yom echad. Right, this particular section of Zechariah is talking about what's going to be when Mashiach comes. When Mashiach comes, V'haya yom echad, there's going to be one day. Hu yivada l'Hashem lo yom v'lo laila. This day will be known to Hashem not day and not night. V'haya le'eif erev yihi ye'or. And it will come to pass at that time that towards evening there will be light. Okay, so what does that mean? Right, so again, in light of, no pun intended, but in light of everything we've just said over the past number of minutes, the last part of that pasuk actually is somewhat understandable. It will come to be in the evening, there will be light. Usually, as the sun is setting in the evening, it means that there's darkness coming into the world. Here, when Mashiach comes, even as the sun sets, it will still be light. That's either meant literally, or it could be meant metaphorically. In other words, that, you know, even when, from a physical perspective, the sun seems to be disappearing, from a spiritual perspective, you know, from a perspective of our closeness to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's going to be incredibly light, you know, at that time. We'll feel that sense of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let me read you the Malbim over here, which I think fits in very, very nicely with, you know, with how Rabbi Yosef Tuvelin understood this pasuk and applied it to his peers. At that time, says the Malbim, it will be a day which is lo yom v'lo laila. The day will come which is neither day nor night. Shishmos yom v'layla yikaru mitzad ha'aras ha'or ha'gashmish is oreach v'shokeya. When we talk about day and night, that's meant in terms of the presence of physical light. You know, the sun is rising, the sun is setting. Aval ha'or sheyihi ye'oz, but the light which will be when Mashiach comes, says the Malbim in explaining the pasuk, yihi ye'or t'midi bilti mishtana klal. It's going to be an eternal light, because it's going to be a light which will represent our closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is not going to come and go like the light does today. You know, again, whether this is meant literally or metaphorically, it doesn't really matter for our purposes, right? Today, sometimes it's daytime, sometimes it's nighttime, meaning on a metaphoric level, sometimes there's a sense of closeness to Hashem, sometimes there's a sense of distance from Hashem. When Mashiach comes, there's going to be a day which is lo yom v'lo laila. No longer will we have that alternating between day and night. There's going to be a constant light, a constant sense of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I think that's the sense in which Rav Yosef Tuvelin uses this phrase over here. Right now in our existence pre-Mashiach, Hashem makes nisim for us, He makes miracles for us, but only by Hasiyah Laila. We still have this phenomenon called night, where we feel distance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Karev Yom Asher Hu Lo Yom V'Lo Laila, bring that day where no longer will we have that distinction between day and night. It's just going to be constant daytime. In other words, a sense of constant connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, never feeling again like it's night and that we have to be hidden from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Indeed, Ram, Hodak Hilacha Hayom Aflacha Halayla. O Mighty One, let us realize that day belongs to you and night also belongs to you. What does that mean? I think, again, in light of everything we're saying over here, what Rav Yosef Tuvelin is saying is something beautiful. Hashem, right now in our existence, we mostly recognize you in times of Yom. We have a hard time recognizing you when it's Laila, when it's a dark time, when it's a depressing time. Let us realize when Mashiach comes that L'cha Hayom, Af L'cha HaLaila. You're here with us during the day, but you're here with us at night as well. Even at night, you, Hashem, are with us. Even when you seem on the surface to be distant, to be not involved, you are still with us even at night. Shomrim hafkid le'ircha kol hayom v'kol halayla. This is based on a pasuk in Yeshayahu, where the Navi speaks about a time in the future where there will be watchmen watching over your city, Yerushalayim, the whole day and the whole night. What does that mean in our context? Even at night, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is watching over His holy city of Yerushalayim, meaning even when things appear to be dark and depressing, Hashem is watching. Ta'ir ke'ar yom cheshkas laila. And this final line of the piyut really expresses it all. Hashem, illuminate the darkness of night with the light of day. Right? And again, clearly what's being used over here is that laila and yom are metaphors for the sense that we have of closeness to Hashem or a sense of being distanced from Hashem. Hashem, bring that day where there's no more night, where there's no more sense of being distanced from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where Ta'ir Ke'ar Yom Cheshkas Laila, cause the night to shine with the brightness of day, right? That's, again, a beautiful description of how, you know, we want to feel like we're close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at every point in our lives. There are no, you know, peaks and valleys, but we always feel that it's Yom, that it's daylight, you know, in our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, you know, all of that is this poem which we say at the very, very end of the Seder, right? We're talking about the importance of miracles happening at night, and I think that poem actually helps us go back and answer the original question with which we started. Why is it so important that the Seder take place at night? Again, we spoke about the halakhic reasons for it, but hashkafically, you know, why is it that the Torah would say to perform the whole, all of the mitzvot at night? I think the answer is the Seder, more than anything else, is a night of emunah. It's supposed to strengthen within ourselves a sense of belief and trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Seder is not primarily about celebration, right? Now, sometimes people mistakenly think that it's about that. Oh, we're celebrating the fact that we got out of Mitzrayim. It's interesting. When did we actually leave Mitzrayim? By daytime. Right? We marched out. Right, the Esam Ayom Hazeh, in the midst of this day. So you know what? You know, if we're celebrating Yetzias Mitzrayim, we should make the Seder first thing in the morning on the first day of Pesach. I imagine everyone here would not object necessarily, right? In other words, yeah, a 9 a.m. Seder, okay, four cups of wine first thing in the morning, okay, you know, the worst thing, right? But if we're celebrating Yetzias Mitzrayim, so we should make the Seder when we left Mitzrayim. We don't make the Seder when we left Mitzrayim. We make the Seder dafka during the first part of the night, right? We try to finish at least portions of the Seder, saying who you talk to, portions of the Seder, all of the Seder. We try to finish portions of the Seder before Hatzos, before midnight. Why do we do that? I mean, if anything, the miracle started at midnight, right? We should dafka do this. If you got to do the Seder at night, do the Seder after midnight, right? I mean, nobody's anxious to do that, right? But why would we dafka do the Seder before midnight? Because the whole point of the Seder is not to celebrate the Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's to express our emunah in the Yetzias Mitzrayim, which has not yet taken place. Right? As we're doing all of these mitzvot, if we're reliving that night, we're doing all of these mitzvot before the Yeshua has actually begun, before the salvation has actually begun. We're doing all these mitzvot before Makkos Becharos, before Hatzos, before the Jews are given the green light to leave Mitzrayim. Everything we're doing on the night of the Seder is an expression of emunah, that despite the fact that we're at night and things seem like they're terrible, and we can't imagine that there's ever going to be, you know, a Yeshua, a redemption, a Geula, we can't imagine any of these things, by doing the Seder at night, we express the idea that even when it's night, we have this tremendous sense of emunah that we express in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's difficult physically, you know. I mean, there are other times during the day that we prefer, you know, all things being equal, to make the Seder. But the best way to really express this sense of it's dark, it's dismal, the Yeshua has not yet begun, but we have emunah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring the Yeshua, the best time of day to do all of that is the first half of the night, you know, before all of the miracles have begun. We're expressing the idea that we know that the miracles are going to come, and we have that faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, it's interesting, right? So Hanukkah is another example of a mitzvah which takes place at night. I would think that there's really a very specific reason that it's done at night. You know, the Gemara indicates that the ideal time to write Hanukkah list is when everyone's coming home from work, because that's the idea of presuming Nisa. You know, in other words, when are most people going to see the Hanukkah list? When they're on their way walking home from work. So the truth is the Rambam sheet, which fortunately we don't follow because this would make life very difficult for us. The Rambam holds that you light Hanukkah lecht in that half hour after the sun goes down, and after that you can't light Hanukkah lecht anymore. So in other words, you know, you want to light Hanukkah lecht, you know, an hour after sunset, according to the Rambam, it's too late already. That's why you see that there are many people very, very careful to try to light, you know, as soon as they can in the beginning of the night. What's that? Shul's we light between Mincha Meiris, right? But that's because everybody's gathered together. But again, I don't think anyone holds like the Rambam to the point where they wouldn't like Hanukkah lecht, you know, if it's an hour after the Shkia. But there, it's not really, it's not so much night, it's, in modern day terms, we would say it's rush hour. Now, the mitzvah of Hanukkah lecht is to light Hanukkah lecht at rush hour. Now, again, where it becomes complicated nowadays is because since the advent of electricity, you know, we don't have the same daily setup as they used to have, where the sun sets and everybody goes home from work. You know, like the world doesn't work like that anymore. So that's why you have, you know, all these complicated shilas, when's the best time to light, and, you know, I'm going out to a party, and, you know, I have to balance that with Hanukkah lecht and all of that. You know, I don't get out of work till 7 o'clock, so, you know, when am I coming home and lighting up? Okay, but, you know, historically, before the advent of electricity, when everybody basically ended work when the sun set, so the whole point of lighting Hanukkah lecht was to do it during rush hour. You know, people are coming home from work, and they're doing it then, you know, and so it's not night so much as it is, you know, rush hour. Plus, so you say, okay, do it through the morning rush hour. Right. What's that? Right. So that's also partially a technical thing. The only time you can really see candles is at night. In other words, if we lit candles, you know, during the morning rush hour, you know, 8:30, everybody's on the way out to work, so everybody had a menorah in their windows, so you wouldn't realize it, because it's very hard to see candles, you know, during the course of the day. So, in a sense, the best way to light it, just for technical reasons, is to do it at night. But here in the case, you know, in the case of Pesach, you know, matzah still tastes like matzah at 10 o'clock in the morning, right? In other words, you know, there isn't any fundamental reason, you would think, why, you know, the matzah and the four cups and all of that has to be dumped at night, other than what we're explaining, that it's all about emunah. Okay, so I wish everybody Chag Kosher V'Sameach, a wonderful, wonderful Yom Tov, and the Ezra Hashem will pick up on tax day, and see everybody there.